You're in the home 6010.
Hello and welcome into the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. It is Thursday, August 18th. My name is Daniel Dopp, joined by Mike Clay and Field Yates. And today's show is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways that you could save. Wow, we are 2 days removed, or we are a day removed from the Fantasy Marathon. Mike and I are still definitely, we've been drinking Pedialyte. Honestly, just all day. Yesterday, that's what we were doing. Field, how are you doing? Are you doing all right now?
Yeah, I'm hanging in. It's been a great few days here. Super encouraged by the nearly 2 million people that signed up to play on ESPN. Would love to see those numbers continue to grow during the preseason. And it's starting to feel a little more real, right? We are 3 weeks away right now from the first regular season game of the NFL schedule. And we have a Monday night game tonight on Thursday night. It's ESPN's Monday Night Football broadcast, one of two we'll have over the next 5 days. And if you're out there and you listen to the show before the game tonight, I will be joining the Monday Night Countdown halftime team to go over some very interesting fantasy thoughts. Hey, so now, if you wanted to watch some TV tonight around maybe like 9:15, 9:30, you know, halftime is subject to change depending on how things go time-wise during the game. Check it out. So fired up for tonight.
Let's go. I'm excited. I'm going to watch that. I want to learn about fantasy football tonight.
I have three very important things that you will learn for the first time. Yes.
Okay, cool.
Patrick Mahomes is good is one of them. I will not spoil the other two.
Should I draft the other ones?
In the first round.
Done.
Real otherwise, cool. Otherwise, it's a steal.
Okay.
Did you guys get a chance to watch Hard Knocks?
I did not yet.
What, Mike? Come on. I've been waiting 2 days to talk about it on the show.
Some of us were working Tuesday night.
I was working Tuesday night, too. Okay, and worked yesterday. Were you here? Yeah. Hold on. Were you here on the show yesterday? Oh, no, you weren't.
I wasn't. I was busy watching Better Call Saul finale.
So.
Okay, now we know.
All right, well, there we go. All right, let's get into the news. We got a lot to be able to cover here. And I want to start with this. Eric Moody does a great job with our daily notes. And one of the things that was in our daily notes today, Melvin Gordon had some comments that said the Denver Broncos want Javonte Williams to be the guy. And Melvin Gordon, with the last 2 years here in Denver, 1,900 rushing yards, over 17 touchdowns. He averaged 4.5 yards per carry. He's been doing really great in that Denver backfield. But can I just say, no duh, they want Javonte Williams to be the guy? Like, this doesn't really do a whole lot for
me. Maybe. Yeah. No, it does something for me. You go first.
Does it? All right. Well, tell me what you think, Mike, because I want to know.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you watch the marathon, this is what Damian Woody and I were saying the whole time, right? Like, they took this guy in the second round for a reason, right? They want him to make a year two leap. It makes perfect sense for it not to be a 50-50 split and for this super talented player who was so good as a rookie to kind of take a step forward. I'm not saying 80-20 or 90-10 we saw from Najee Harris last year, but 65-70%. I think that's a possibility. And look, I made this comp in a recent column I did. It's this year's version of last year's breakouts, right? So you identify the breakout players from last season. You find a player in a similar situation who can make a leap, right?
Okay.
So my Jonathan Taylor pick, which it's extreme, right, to find someone that can do that, is Javonte Williams. And it might seem like that makes no sense, right? Because you think Jonathan Taylor, he just took control of the backfield and ran away with it and all these touches. Well, you look at the first 5 weeks last season, Jonathan Taylor played 50% of the Colts snaps and was 11th in fantasy points. Actually, if you go back 1 week, he was like 23rd in fantasy points. So he didn't start off well. He was splitting that backfield with Marlon Mack and Nyheim Hines, who I know Mack didn't have the best year coming off the injury. Nyheim Hines is really good pass catching back, but Taylor basically demanded more of that backfield pie, right? Because he was so good. I think that's what's going to happen here. Melvin Gordon's 29 now. He's still a good player. He's going to have a role, but I think Javonte Williams will take control. And Melvin Gordon seems to agree.
Okay, so there are two aspects of this, and I think it's important to do the Melvin Gordon side first, and then I'll dive into the Javonte Williams side.
Okay.
There are quotes that we see on Twitter that sometimes look a little different in text than they do when you actually see the person say it out loud, and you see the context of the question. So I went back and watched Melvin Gordon's press conference yesterday, and Melvin Gordon, when he was saying this, it wasn't a throwaway line. He was being asked about reps and how he had been utilized and clearly running behind Javonte Williams. And by the end of his answer, and there was a lot more to it than just they want Javonte to be the guy, it almost struck me like he was backtracking from that initial answer, not because it's not true, but because he doesn't want to sort of reveal the Broncos' cards, right? It was almost like he couldn't help himself by saying like, It's Javonte's job. And then it was like, yeah. hold on. No, you know, but we're going to like work hard to be, you know, we're going to, I'm going to contribute and give everything I can. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right. So I thought there was real merit to this based off of how Melvin answered the question and what the question was. Then I was thinking back to when Melvin Gordon re-signed with the Denver Broncos. He lasted on the open market until April 26th. That's a month and a half into free agency. There was a very quiet market for him. When your player lasts until April 26th, it usually suggests to me that we were happy to get him back, but we were preparing for him to leave. He did have some interest in the Baltimore Ravens. I'm sure there were other teams involved. He ended up getting a deal for 1 year and $2 million. It has upside up to $5 million. By the way, Marlon Mack signed a deal with the Colts last year for 1 year and $2 million. So it is worth noting that up until about the draft, the Broncos seemed prepared to keep Javonte Williams by himself as the guy in the backfield. And the Melvin Gordon deal came together in part because I get $2 million. What are you going to say no to that? Right. He's still a useful player. All right. So that's the part. I think that's the Melvin Gordon part of this. Then there's the idea of like, what would happen if Javonte Williams actually got 65% of the opportunities? Because last year he played 50.6% of the snaps. 50.6. Even just playing basically half the snaps for the Broncos last year, worth noting, he was 15th amongst running backs in pass catches. It wasn't like, and he's not like a J.D. McKissick who basically, when he's in the game, all he's doing is catching passes. Really adept pass catcher. And then when we know when he has the ball, he's awesome with the football. Last year, no running back broke more tackles on rushing attempts per Pro Football Reference than Javonte Williams. He had 31. And if you're going to sit there and say, well, he also was in the top 20 in carries last year, that's more of a volume stat than it is just a talent stat. He also had the fewest number of rushing attempts per broken tackles last year. Every 6.5 attempts, he broke a tackle. Best in the NFL. So not only was he doing it, he was doing it, he was in a split role. So I'm optimistic that if he gets more, he's going to be able to create yards after contact. And some of the metrics last year weren't great before contact for either Broncos running backs. Well, how about the fact that they were playing with Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater as their quarterback? If you go back and look at the percentage of snaps in which Broncos running backs were facing a loaded box defined to seven men or more, it was like 62%. The Seattle Seahawks last year, Russell Wilson with their quarterback, now in Denver, closer to 50%. So all these things are pointing up for Javonte Williams that the only hesitation for making him a top 10 back was the idea that he might have a split workload. It may end up being that RB12 is not drafting him at his peak, but maybe drafting him at his median outcome. Which that's a safe thing in drafts. This makes me feel that much more encouraged about Javonte Williams. Really can go to the moon if he gets his opportunity.
Absolutely. Agreed. And I like your new hat. Your analytics guy?
Stats guy.
I like that. You sound like me. I'm just like looking at a mirror. Much handsomer mirror.
Well, but you know, here's the thing, Mike. No, take that back. But here's the thing is that Mike got a pool recently. All right. So Mike doesn't care about the game enough anymore.
Yeah.
I, meanwhile, I care about the game more this year than you.
Yeah. You've been grinding in the your mom's basement while I'm out partying.
Yeah. That's right.
With the Miller Lite on
the
pool.
Well, when you have a kid, you know, you got two kids, but they're older than mine. When your baby's asleep, like, you can't go anywhere, right? You can't leave the house.
This is true.
So you get these two-hour windows where it's like, I got to be locked in. And next thing you know, I'm grinding the Pro Football Reference broken tackle pages.
I love it. I love it. Here for it. Love Javonte. He was like that in college, too. Such a young, good, talented player. Love the confirmation bias here for Melvin Gordon, right? We love Javonte, and he loves him, too. So does Denver.
Last thing, we can move on. Javonte Williams right now going as running back 14. Melvin Gordon going as running back 37. So there is a wide gap there. The article that you just talked about, Mike, is that an E-plus article?
Sure is.
You can find that right now on E-plus over the weekend. 2021 breakouts who could fit that same mold in 2022. All right. We did our fantasy marathon draft a couple of nights ago. We talked about my draft. We talked about Liz's draft yesterday on the show. But Mike, we didn't get a chance to break down your draft. You were the number two drafter. You were also the grader, which, trust me, we have a lot of things to
do. I got a high grade. That was weird.
Yeah, for some reason, your grade was super high.
You just said confirmation bias. Is that the same thing
That's
here?
That's exactly what that is.
Okay, just making sure.
And Adam Schefter did a good job like drafting off my rankings, too. like in the draft room. So he got a good grade too.
Yeah. Coming from the number two spot though, you did a couple of things last night that you have been preaching here on this podcast. One of them being weighted on quarterback, which we will talk about in a little bit, but just looking at the top half of your draft from the marathon, how do you feel about it? Just break it down for the audience.
First of all, I'm glad you just said last night when you meant two nights ago. That's how I feel too. Like my schedule's all messed up.
These days all run together right now.
Yeah, exactly. But, I like it a lot. I mean, CMC, getting him in the two spot. I mean, you can make a case for him first overall. We know how good he is when he's on the field. So love that. Debo Samuel, I talked about this during the marathon. Falling way too far. It's almost embarrassing at this point. The guy, no matter how they used him last season, was a top three fantasy receiver. So anytime you can get him late in round two, that's a steal. Tyreek Hill coming back. Not my favorite target this season, but round three, he was the best guy. He was the last receiver in that top tier. Yep. You know, or we'll say the second tier. I like the big three, and then there's the next tier. Happy to get him. J.K. Dobbins, Stefani's not happy with me about that one. I'm usually targeting him in round five, but I felt that was a good place to strike there on Dobbins. Like him a lot. I think he breaks out this season. Much like we were just talking about Javonte Williams. You're not taking him at his ceiling. I think he has a very high ceiling. And of course, the rookie Breece Hall, those first and second round running backs in fantasy have been money for a while now. I think Breece in the fifth is a fine value.
Did you go into the draft trying to grab three running backs within the first five rounds, or did just draft just sort of fell that way to you?
It's all value. It's all looking for value. Usually like round four, especially in a slightly larger league, like a 12 teamer, I'm almost always going receiver, if not Cam Akers in that spot. That's a really kind of a hotbed for wide receivers. It's like rounds four or five, sometimes round three. But again, I just take the best guy on the board, and that's what came to me.
So we watched in this draft, Ja'Marr Chase went number three overall to Adam Schefter. We watched Travis Kelce go nine overall to Tyler in the first round. Saquon Barkley was a top 15 running back. These are things like a lot of those picks I feel like might be a little bit too high for me, but this is the kind of stuff that happens in home leagues all the time. There are always people in your drafts that draft a little bit different than probably the way that you've set up. How do you prepare for that kind of, I don't want to call it chaos, but just that variance within drafting?
Exactly. You just have to stay disciplined. You need to have a draft board, and you always, basically every player's value changes after every pick. Now you don't have to make some wild adjustments to anything, but you just kind of keep an eye on your tier, see what's happening. An example is I'm in a best ball draft right now. And in the sixth round, Patrick Mahomes was still there. And usually I'm not going to end up with Mahomes, right? You know, it's just, he's not going to make it to a point where I feel he's a value.
Yeah.
In the sixth round,
he's a value.
I'm going to take him. Like, it's just, it's going to shake up my strategy a little bit. That's okay. You know, you just have to be prepared. When a player like that pops out, even if you weren't thinking about going that way, you just do it. And maybe that means you start receiver, 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 tight end. You know, every draft is different for me. I don't have any set format. You just have to essentially go with the flow and maximize value. Because I'll tell you what, if Mahomes is sticking out like that and you say, I want to wait, I want to take a quarterback later, and you pass on him, the next guy in line is going to take Mahomes and get an edge on you in your draft, and you're starting behind everyone else. It doesn't make sense. You have to take advantage of values when they present themselves.
So you didn't really see a value at the quarterback position within our marathon draft.
Oh yeah, I did.
You did, because you waited until the very end. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Josh Allen went pretty early. We had some quarterbacks come off the board, but you stayed strong. Mm-hmm. You had this idea that on quarterback, I am going to wait. Do you like your strategy? Now that you've watched your team, you see how it turned out. Do you like that strategy?
It worked out great. I was just hoping that no one would take multiple quarterbacks. Now, Woody did.
Yeah.
But one or two teams could have, and I would have got away with it, because it's a 10-team league, especially in a 10-team league.
Right, yeah.
You could wait. So I waited until my last pick in the 12th round, and I was looking at Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Matthew Stafford. All of them were there, still available, and everyone else had a quarterback. So that's why I just kept waiting and waiting and waiting. I took Brady. Him and Rodgers were both top five last year. Actually, Stafford was six. So three of the top six finishers last season were still available in the 12th round. So I could have... You picked for me, I think.
I did.
You were like, take Brady.
Yeah, take Brady. Yeah. If you're relatively new to fantasy, I can understand that sometimes you probably feel a bit overwhelmed with all the stuff that we're suggesting you put on your plate when you go into the draft. One thing that is easy, though, is that you can do the math on how many quarterbacks have been taken, how many quarterbacks you like, and how many teams are in your league. To Mike's point, let's just say somebody else double dipped and took Tom Brady. There were still options there. There were undrafted quarterbacks that plenty of people would have been happy with if they had emerged from that draft with that player as their signal caller.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, if you're in the same, you're in with the same group every year, you kind of even peek at the last 2 years of your drafts and see, like, does everyone take two quarterbacks? You know, maybe if it's like a lot of casual players, maybe they take two quarterbacks, and then maybe you need to strike a little earlier just because you don't want to end up with, like, you know, Davis Mills as your quarterback. But if you notice that every year everyone just takes one, just wait. Just wait forever. You don't even have to pick one. You'll have someone on waivers you could start.
The only thing I tend to see is that the people that maybe start the quarterback train with a Mahomes or an Allen just say, why would I bother a second roster spot on a quarterback? Those who maybe grab the eighth, ninth, or tenth quarterback say, yeah, I know Joe Burrow was awesome last year, but maybe just in case I'll insulate my roster with the Trey Lance as well.
Yeah, yeah, I've done that too. Sometimes if I go like Rodgers, Stafford, if I wait, you know, maybe I'll throw a dart at a Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, something like that, just go upside. But I might do that anyway, especially in a league where you could trade.
I got one more question about the draft from the marathon, and then we can move on to Double Trouble. But we watched Dalvin Cook go ahead of Derrick Henry in that draft. And this is a thing I find very interesting because Dalvin Cook is a guy. He's a monster. Mm-hmm. We know that, right? But Dalvin Cook is also a guy who has missed multiple games in every single year of his career. And now we're talking about Derrick Henry, who had missed three games in his prior five seasons up until last year when he got hurt. And now all of a sudden, Derrick Henry's injury history seems to outweigh what Dalvin Cook has been. But it's been the entirety of Dalvin Cook's career. He has been injury prone and missed multiple games every year. Is this too early for Dalvin Cook? Should this be closer between the two? Is there too much being made for Derrick Henry's injury history here? I'm so torn between these two guys. So, Mike, I'm curious where you land on those.
Yeah, I think it was a pinch early, but I mean, I still value him as a borderline round one, round two sort of player, right? I mean, you mentioned it. He's never appeared in more than 14 games in a season. So you have to count on him probably missing a little time. Only 6 touchdowns last season. A little unlucky. I think that could bounce back this season. Probably more concerning, 3.7 targets per game. That is a career low for him. Does that bounce back in the new scheme? Maybe. Yeah. But there's been some chatter out there. It's kind of been quiet, but that they might utilize multiple backs more often. Not like, you know, he's 27. Cook's had a big workload. Maybe they work in Alex Mattison more often. Kenny Nwangu, too, was, you know, a pretty good player, mid-round pick. He's a playmaker. They can get him occasional touches. So before Henry, I wouldn't do it.
Here's how I would describe it. When I saw the board right there, Dalvin Cook was not on like the short list of two or three players that I was expecting to go off the board next. Mm-hmm. I thought it might be Derrick Henry. I thought it might be another wide receiver. I wasn't specific. Maybe Alvin Kamara, with Adam Schefter having previously updated us that perhaps Alvin Kamara might not miss any time this year due to suspension. Like, am I going to sit here and tell you that Dalvin Cook is a worthless roster spot? No, of course not. Like, he's really good. No, it's a little bit earlier than I would have taken him. This reminds me in some ways of the conversation we had yesterday surrounding Travis Kelce. Is it my preference to take him ninth off the board? No, but I think both Mark Andrews and Travis Kelce going at like 15 to 18 is plenty worthwhile in a 10-team league.
I do not disagree with you, Field. And to that point, even though Dalvin Cook has missed 2 to 3 games, it seems like every single year of his career, this insurance running back question is brought to you by Geico. Switch to Geico today and see all the ways that you could save. If you're drafting Dalvin Cook, you're almost going in with the expectation of, hey, he's probably going to miss some time here and there. Are you making sure that you draft an insurance back like Alexander Mattison for when that happens? And if you are, how early are you doing it? And if you're not, are you drafting someone else's insurance back for more upside that direction? I realize that's a lot of questions to ask.
Yeah. So do you want to? I will say this. Alex Mattison, as far as insurance backs go, is elite, right? He was the number one scoring running back the 4 weeks Dalvin Cook was out last season, and they were not consecutive. None of them were. They were just 4 random weeks. He was in there. He was awesome. And he's not expensive, right? So knowing Cook's history, I think this is a unique situation where you're like, the 11th round, I have Cook, I'll take Madison. I'm fine with that, right? If he was going in like the 7th round, like Tony Pollard, different story, right? Yep.
Alexander Mattison is running back 46 going in the 17th round of drafts.
So undrafted. Yeah.
So fine with that. That being said, you know, I'll use myself as an example. I took Christian McCaffrey, right, in the marathon draft. I think there's a lot of people out there who, as soon as they do that, will kind of circle Deontay Foreman or Chuba Hubbard and say, I have to get them now. And maybe even take them over Alex Mattison. I would not. I would take Alex Mattison before those guys for sure, because we don't even know if McCaffrey misses time. It's probably a committee, right? Who are you going to start? I think a lot of people are sure it's Foreman, but is he going to have a passing game role? Is he going to be startable? Is Chuba Hubbard going to get 12 to 14 touches?
He's not
going to
get the same volume that CMC is getting.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And we saw that last year. Like Amir Abdullah played a big role in that backfield with Hubbard. So you just have to, there's certain insurance backs you want to go after and have on your bench. To answer your question, they don't have to be the backups for any of your starters. In fact, if you have Madison and you don't have Cook and Cook goes down, another person in your league just got hurt big time and your team just got way better. So That's really what you should be looking to do.
There's a teeny tiny list of guys that are not Tony Pollard or Kareem Hunt's who have a role no matter what that I believe are worthwhile 10-team league picks. Alexander Mattison is the most obvious one that comes to mind. And frankly, offhand, I'm not sure if there's anybody else that I can say has that clear of an upside role and plays in an offense where the player in front of him has a little bit of a brittle injury history. And maybe the only other consideration I would throw in here is it might depend on bench size. If you play with a short bench, I get why it's harder, but I think Alexander Mattison might be one of, if not the only backs, who is worthy of a stash, even if his value is exclusively tied to Dalvin Cook not being on the field. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And throughout the season, there's always going to be guys, when you put guys on IR or guys get hurt and get cut, those, the end of the bench spots, I love playing with them, right? Yeah. So for example, by like week five, I might have Hassan Hoskins sitting there one week. Like maybe I put someone on IR Sunday morning because he's out. I might pick up Hoskins. And if something happens to Derrick Henry, you know, maybe Hoskins is a, I don't know, maybe he's only a flex option, but he'll be the hottest waiver ad the next week. So those are the kind of guys you want to always keep on the edge of your bench. That's kind of how I play the insurance market, not reaching on the guys, you know, the insurance back for the guy I picked.
And the difference between someone like Alexander Mattison and a Haskins or a Zamir White, as an example, or any number of backup running backs is that, like, I just haven't seen it from those players yet, nor from that staff yet. So I don't know if, like, when Derrick Henry was hurt last year, it was a committee and then forming, you know, it was sort of like every week it was trying to figure out who was going to be the guy to step in for Derrick Henry in Las Vegas. It's a whole new coaching staff. So I think Mattison is unique in that way, but I love Mike's strategy of just generally speaking, identify players that if worst case scenario happens to the starter would have some level of fantasy value. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Closing out our marathon segment, Mike, last question from me. Has Tyler blocked you on Twitter yet?
Yeah. Has he?
He has not.
He hasn't done.
He has not blocked me yet.
Just muted. He's just muted. That's all.
There's some talks about a rematch down the road at some point.
Nice.
I'm thinking next year's draft might have some awkward silences from one side of this. Not sure which side. We'll see. Hopefully his. But
it was a fun night.
It was a lot of fun. We had a good time going back and forth.
Great night.
Yeah.
Great.
We had so much fun with that. Tyler's great.
He's so great.
Awesome on Daily Wager and the Bet Podcast. Terrific host. Terrific analyst. But maybe not the best fantasy drafter. You know, maybe.
We gotta although work on last year, he was an awesome fantasy drafter. That's the thing.
I know. I don't know why he didn't pick good players this year,
but
he did.
You.
I'm did great last year.
All right. Speaking of picking good players, Mike, sometimes I'm looking for a good credit card, and I'm having a hard time finding the right one. Do you think you can help me out?
I can help you out with NerdWallet.
Yes.
When it comes to choosing the top running back, wide receiver, or quarterback, something that Tyler did not do the other day, even which defense is right for you on a given week, you know where to turn. But when you're trying to decide on the right credit card for your wallet, the right mortgage lender for your dream home, or the right savings account, where do you go? The nerds at NerdWallet are here to help you make a smart financial decision. NerdWallet is a personal finance site run by money nerds. Think people as obsessed about personal finance as we are about fantasy sports, who want to share their knowledge with our listeners to help them find the right financial products for them. Let's say you're looking for a new rewards credit card. NerdWallet can help you compare cashback cards side by side so you can feel confident choosing the right one that suits your spending. Think of them like your weekly wide receiver PPR rankings, but you're comparing top credit cards that work for you. NerdWallet, the smartest decision for all your financial decisions.
Inflation and rising interest rates are forcing many to rethink their personal investing playbook. Tackle the challenge of finding the right income strategy as you navigate this period of volatility. At Global X ETFs, our funds look beyond what you might have considered, offering solutions for investors seeking to increase or diversify the yield potential of their portfolio. Visit globalxetfs.com/income to learn more.
Double trouble.
Double trouble.
Double trouble.
Double trouble.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
All right, you look at the list here on the screen. If you are watching the live stream, looking at the Texans and Titans that we are going to be talking about today.
Little different than Chiefs Chargers Day.
Little different than Chiefs Chargers.
Just a little bit.
Let's jump in with Derrick Henry because he is the most fun person to talk about here. Last year, Derrick Henry was fantasy's top scoring running back by 40 points through week 8 of the season. And then he got hurt. We have not seen him since Halloween in a regular season game. But right now he is no higher than RB4 on anybody's board across at least ESPN here. And it feels like across the industry, it feels like he has fallen down there. Does he still have a shot, Field Jace, to be the RB1 in fantasy this year?
No question about it. There are only two concerns here. One would be if the age catches up to him. He's 28 years old, but that's something that we can't predict with absolute certainty. Mm-hmm. Two would be that the foot injury he suffered last year is something that bothers him or has slowed him down as a player overall. He played in the playoff game, but that game got sort of out of hand. He couldn't be his normal self. Stefania has said she's not worried. Now let's look at the good stuff here, because there is a lot of it. He played exactly 8 games last year. In 8 games, he had 20 or more touches 8 times.
That's good.
He averaged 27.4 carries per game.
That's really good.
27.4 carries per game. He is being used different than any other player in the NFL. I'm not sure we've ever seen a stretch, or maybe not at least 10 or 15 years, of the last 55 or so games from Derrick Henry. In those last 55 games, he has 55 rushing touchdowns, one per game in a 55-game stretch. He had more rushing yards last year than Austin Eckler, Alvin Kamara, Josh Jacobs, Damian Harris, and David Montgomery. He missed 9 games.
Wow.
He only has 94 career catches in 86 games played. Normally, that would be a massive red flag for us. Derrick Henry's workload offsets that concern. He could be a massive value going at RB4 and somewhere in the middle to the back half of the first round.
And to that point, really quickly, Mike, Derrick Henry's pass catching was like skyrocketing from what we had seen in previous seasons last year before he got. Well, I don't really want to say skyrocketing.
A little bit.
It was on the way up. For him, it was on the way up.
Yeah, 18 catches, which, I mean, he was on pace for career highs across the board in that category. And that's really all we need, right? If he catches 30 footballs on top of that,
all you need.
Rushing workload, that's fine. I mean, look, if you're in a non-PPR league and someone took him first overall, you're like, all right, like, you could see it, right?
Yeah,
it's PPR
totally.
That kind of limits him from that McCaffrey, Taylor, maybe Eckler territory. But if he plays like he did last season and sees that volume, which he might, by the way, because they have a lot of question marks at wide receiver, especially with no AJ Brown there, he could be in for another very high volume season. One of the favorites to lead the NFL in rushing in our minds and certainly by the sports books' minds as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. It's going to be tough to be able to pass up on Derrick Henry with everything that he still is. All right. We've talked about Bobby Trees in the past, and when he was with the Los Angeles Rams, he was just a target monster, Mike Clay, somebody that absolutely...
Three of the last 4 years.
Hold on, let me grab my sheet again. Three of the last 4 years, he ranked 7th in the NFL in catches in the 3 years prior. Do you see that volume with this new offense here in Tennessee, Ryan Tannehill under center, everything that Bobby Trees has been, is that going to continue here in Tennessee?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think his target share will be respectable in this offense because he's their number one for now, right? Until Treylon Burks kind of develops a little bit. You have Nick Westbrook is next up. The rookie Kyle Phillips is getting a little hype, but it really should be Woods as the number one. The problem I have here is with his ceiling, right? He's never cleared 6 touchdowns. He's not really going to be a big touchdown scorer in this offense. And, you know, you had a stat about A.J. Brown, right? About his routes per game, right? He was always limited in terms of volume and couldn't kind of get over the top in fantasy and become that elite wide receiver one because of this extremely run-heavy offense. I mean, last year, Tennessee did not have Derrick Henry for half the season, right? They led the NFL in rushing attempts. Yeah. Still, yeah. Right? They just run the ball. They didn't change their philosophy without Derrick Henry. That's not going to change this season. So he's 30 years old. He's coming off a torn ACL. He doesn't score touchdowns. It's a low volume offense. There's just too many boxes that are not checked for me with Robert Woods. So for me, I think he's more of a borderline flex, and I know I'm a little low on him.
Yeah, I saw the rankings there, by the way, and I want to make sure that I'm consistent because previously we had talked about him as a top 35 wide receiver. I was willing to make that board bet that he would be. After some rankings updates and just sort of diving deeper, I've softened my stance a little bit on Robert Woods. I've got him at wide receiver 39 with a couple of guys trending in the right direction. And I think probably my biggest takeaway is that some of what those concerns Mike said have been dramatically overbaked in his ADP. He's going as wide receiver 47 right now off the board. And you laid out some of the things that I like. They're without 3 of their top 4 target getters last year. I know Julio Jones was bad, but he and A.J. Brown accounted for 153 targets. Someone's got to catch those passes or at least see those targets. And from 2018 to 2021, when Woods made this leap, he played a total of 56 games. He had at least 5 catches in 36 of those 56 games and basically was good for around 1,000 receiving yards per season. I don't know that this will be replicated or not, but he was amongst, he was not quite Deebo Samuel before Deebo Samuel, but during those 4 years, he added 473 rushing yards and 5 rushing touchdowns. If the Titans mimic some of that, then I think there's a chance that you can boost his upside a little bit. I'm certainly mindful of the fact that this is one of the lowest passing offenses in terms of pass rate and overall volume in the NFL. I do wonder, though, that because the AFC looks stronger top to bottom, if Tennessee might have to adjust its philosophy just a little bit. Not enough to make me feel different about Derrick Henry, but maybe feel a little bit more optimistic about Robert Woods. And the ACL is a legitimate concern. Stefania's talked about it. I will say the one thing, though, that has me kind of coming back to my optimism with Robert Woods is that the Titans traded for him because they needed somebody right away. They needed him right away. And I'm not saying they're going to rush him back irresponsibly, but I do wonder if they have an internal confidence that maybe if he's not 100% from week one, he might be 100% early on in the season. So I still feel like he deserves to go earlier in drafts. Wide receiver 39 for me. That's 8 slots ahead of his ADP.
I'll tell you what, with that, I feel like this is the window for the Titans. They've got to know that with Derrick Henry, they only have a finite number of years left.
Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Bud Dupree they signed last offseason coming off of a torn ACL. If they've got a decent number of guys, Taylor Lewan, who are all incredible players, but they're in their late 20s, or I think in the case of Tannehill, even like their early 30s.
Yep, you're not wrong. All right, we talked about, you know, with that being said, Robert Woods, if he's not ready, they drafted a guy in the first round to be A.J. Brown's potential replacement in Treylon Burks. But we've had some reports out of camp, Mike, that he's struggled a bit. Field.
Yeah, I want to be careful in clarifying. A lot of Titans fans were not thrilled with how some of the things that were fonted on our previous conversation surrounding Treylon Burks.
Okay.
There was some reporting that they believe was misinterpreted in that Treylon Burks has not been working exclusively with the backups, that he has been getting work with the ones as well, and there have been some bright moments camp. There have been instances where he has been working with reserve level players, and Mike Vrabel, as recently as I believe yesterday, had been talking about the need to get more, to see more from Treylon Burks in terms of number of reps and things like that. These things date all the way back to minicamp where Burks was unavailable for portions of it. So I'm not raising the red flag here. We said the same. Remember, we drew the analogy to when Ja'Marr Chase couldn't catch. Mm-hmm. We are merely pointing out that it's not as if every report has been this sparkling Treylon Burks is going to become the next Randy Moss player in short order. Yeah, I just want to provide that context before we dove in.
Makes perfect sense, and maybe he gets off to a slow start. Again, I'm just kind of, he was the first, we'll say second receiver being drafted among this rookie class, right? It was Drake London and then Burks for quite a while.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's still sustaining itself now, but his ADP is probably going to trickle down a little bit, right? So we will keep an eye on that. If it starts to fall, he's a good bench player. You want that high pedigree first year player. It could be a big question mark, but it's not going to hurt you if you take him in your later round. So you're seeing it on your screen. If you're watching here, wide receiver 48 right now,
14th round.
Yeah.
This might be, if you're debating Robert Woods versus Treylon Burks, if you believe that Treylon Burks, because of his age and his explosiveness, he was very good after the catch at Arkansas. That was one of his hallmark traits. If you're in the 13th or 14th round and you're saying, I don't care about the guy that I feel confident can get me 10 or 15 points in a week, I want the player that might have a chance to be this year's, maybe not Ja'Marr Chase, right? But this year's late round flyer amongst rookie wideouts that can become a weekly fixture, then I get rolling the dice on the younger player.
Yes.
Right. Exactly. And remember, this guy's, he was the heaviest receiver in this class, 225 pounds, and he ran a 4.55. Like, he's a good athlete. And to your point, just super, super heavily targeted and productive. Good with the ball in his hands. Just might take a little time for him to develop, right? So even Justin Jefferson started slow his first year, right?
Odell Beckham Jr., right? Well, he was hurt too.
He was hurt and stepped on the field. But that's a great example, because it didn't matter that he barely played like the whole offseason and that it was a crowded Giants depth chart. The guy was special. And when he stepped on the field, was an immediate difference maker. Ja'Marr Chase, same thing. We don't know if Burks is that guy yet, but if he is, that's a league-winning player. That's the kind of guy you want on your bench.
Yeah. Last person here, Austin Hooper from the tight end position. He's somebody that Ryan Tannehill has said a lot of great things about, but Mike, I think it's going to be tough to be able to look at him as a tight end one within a 10-team fantasy league.
Not a tight end one, but if you're in a two tight end league, probably a solid target, right? We talked about the receiver concerns here. He might play a role, and if he sees 5-6 targets a game and scores 5-6 touchdowns, he's going to flirt with the top 15. So I usually don't draft two tight ends.
Yep.
But if you decide to, he's a fine late round guy. But certainly if you're starting two tight ends, you could look at him.
Yeah, when just you mentioned Kyle Phillips earlier on. Just Double Trouble is our chance to just sort of mention players, right? And I don't know that he merits redraft consideration in a 10-team league. If you're playing a 16-team league, he's a slot receiver. And generally speaking, slot receivers have a legit chance in the right offense to score somewhere between 5 and 7 targets per game. So might be a deep league name to keep an eye on. Killer route runner out of UCLA. And, you know, this is not a run, not a pass heavy offense, but maybe he zaps up some targets.
By the way, I'll throw Nick Westbrook in there too, because he's in like a 12-team league, borderline draftable. I mean, you just sometimes you just have to picture the offense. All right, they step on the field in week one, right? Who's on the field? What does it look like? And in two wide sets for the Titans,
it could be Nick Westbrook.
It might be Robert Woods, and it might be Westbrook. So something to think about. Could see, you know, six targets. Could be like a Russell Gage with Atlanta last couple of years sort of feel to it. Just a sneaky deep league guy.
I have a lot of Nick Westbrook-Akina in my best ball leagues. He is basically free as my...
Really?
Because I looked at him last year. He's a guy that I watched put up 17-plus fantasy points multiple weeks when guys were out. I realize it's a low-volume offense, but when it's the 20th pick of my best ball draft, and to your point, he might start 3, 4, 5 weeks... Like,
or the whole season.
That's value. That is value. Period.
Yeah, he's one of them. Every year there's guys in the projections. You're like, I can't seem to knock them down far enough, right? They don't seem like exciting players, but there's a path to a 15 to 16% target share, and I can't give it to anyone else. It's probably him. So
the real question is there a path to 9 wins for this team? Because that's what Caesars has right now, Mike Clay.
This is one of the largest gaps I have between my line and Caesars. I'm under. I'm at 7.8. I'm well under.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a big gap for me. Man, I've got him under as well. I've realized I have to kind of pick my spots here a little bit with these over-unders, and I'm going under here just slightly. I know that Mike Vrabel is like the ultimate X factor as a coach.
Yes.
But this is a team that last year, I don't know how they got the job done. It was incredible. And I think the AFC has gotten that much better, and the division has gotten better as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I'm not sure they're as good as they've been in years past. And the conference is so good. Yeah. It's going to be tough.
They were hitting above their belt, playing above their weight. What's that? What's the
punching
term?
Above their weight?
Punching above their weight. That's what it is. Yeah, it feels like that's what they were doing last year. I'm going to take the under as well. All right, let's talk about the Houston Texans. And Eric Moody, Field Yates, has talked about Damian Pierce. Seems like all fantasy marathon, you want to find a guy, a running back that you can wait on as a potential sleeper. He has been mentioning Damian Pierce. How do you feel about him here in this running back by committee? And what is a tough running back room that does not seem like they're going to get a ton of yards?
Yeah, so I think if people don't know much about Damian Pierce, 4th round pick at Florida, played all 4 years, never had 1,000 yards in a season, but a solid player and a good prospect coming out in this year's draft. There have been plenty of 4th round or lower picks at running back that have made an impact. So I like him. And what I would say to you is that when you're drafting from a backfield that is likely going to be a committee, and an offense that is likely not going to be very good. They were in the bottom 10 in many statistical categories last season. I don't think you're reasonably expecting a guy that's going to be a top 12 or 15 or 20 or even 25 running back for the course of the season. What you're looking for is the guy that you can draft and stash. And in the event that he becomes the starter by the middle of the season or late in the season, or even for a handful of games during the season, you can utilize him. And if the options are Marlon Mack or Damian Pierce or Rex Burkhead, I'm going to lean towards the youngest guy who I think has the most explosive skill set right now. So I am cautioning you that if you draft him, I wouldn't expect that I'm going to have Damian Pierce in my lineup right away, because this is an old school head coach in Lovie Smith, who I do believe will want to lean on a running back committee out of the gates. But I think that, as Mike often tells us, cream rises, and I think that Damian Pierce will eventually be the starter.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm a little concerned about his ADP kind of getting a little, there's a little wacky hype right now. Mike. It's getting a little tough. Yep.
Where is he at? Running back 41, as you're worried about?
Well, no, it's starting to trend up. I mean, the last week or so, he had a good preseason game. It's starting to trend up. So keep an eye on that, right? I've seen him, I think even in our marathon draft, didn't he go like really early.
He did.
And that too.
The top 10. Top 10. I mean, we only did 12 rounds. Yeah. I think he went in like the 10th round or 11th round to move.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And keep in mind, I mean, at Florida, I think you briefly mentioned this, his max is most touches in a season was 106 carries and 23 targets, right? A lot of people wondered if that was just misutilization or if there's something, a reason why that was the case. So this is a guy that's young and just never has played a feature back role. So is he, could be an Antonio Gibson, kind of has Antonio Gibson feel to it. Maybe he can follow that path and be fantasy relevant right away. But you're right. It might take a little bit of time here. It's something I'm going to be keeping an eye on.
But is he Antonio Gibson with upside? Because I don't think Antonio Gibson really has upside this year.
Well, I think he's referring to
I'm saying as a rookie.
As a rookie.
It was the same thing. Remember, Antonio Gibson worked out with the wide receivers, and we didn't really know what position he was going to play. He was never really utilized as a runner. Same kind of thing with Pierce, who's very versatile, but just hasn't had that workload. Can he handle that in the pros? We'll see. So the kind of guy you want on your bench, you know, and again, you just you're not sure if he's going to be a week one starter. Maybe he is Elijah Mitchell. Maybe he comes right out and has 17 touches in week one. It's possible, but we're not sure. He might have three too.
Last thing I'll say is that if you're not playing in a great offense as a running back, you probably need to have some passing game value. We saw a little bit of that at Florida, never had a ton of targets or opportunities. It doesn't mean that the guy can't catch passes, kind of like Kenneth Walker, who we don't know whether Michigan State didn't utilize him that way because they didn't need to or because they didn't think he was capable of doing it. I would like Pierce more if I thought there was a bit more passing game upside, but I'm with Mike. If he starts to creep towards like RB 32, 33, 34, I think it's getting a little bit too rich right now.
Texans ran for just 100 yards as a team three times last season. That negative game script could be something to think about when you're taking Damian Pierce as well. All right, let's talk about Brandon Cooks. And I think the way that we have these rankings and the ADP, how it works out, is completely indicative of where Brandon Cooks is every single year. Right now, ESPN ADP is wide receiver 21. But surprise, he's ranked higher than that by everybody because Brandon Cooks is that guy that is this unsexy wide receiver that just has 1,000-yard seasons.
Yep.
And with Davis Mills under center again, Mike Clay, do you see Brandon Cooks overperforming his wide receiver 21 ADP right now?
Well, guess who drafted him in the during our marathon draft?
Was it you?
That was me.
Oh, it was you. Okay.
Love Brandon Cooks. The guy is so good. 1,000 yards in a top 20 fantasy finish in six of the past eight seasons with, count them, four different teams. It doesn't matter where he goes or who the quarterback is.
And he had some good quarterbacks. The NFL. Yeah.
Yeah. He had some good quarterbacks early in his career. But last year we thought, okay, well now it's, you know, Davis Mills maybe won't be as quite as good. He still was. He still delivered. Never really much of a touchdown score, under seven each of the past four seasons, but his career yards per target, 9.2, which is outstanding. Mm-hmm. And he has a target share of at least 25% each of the past two seasons. And look, I know Davis Mills wasn't under center all season last year, but when they did play together, 96 targets, 69 catches, 736 yards, and five touchdowns. I mean, that's some pretty good production, a pretty good connection between those guys. You would expect Mills to be a little better this season. I mean, Cooks just gets it done every year. Why not? Why would you not take
him? To me, he's next tier at Keenan Allen. Yeah. You kind of know what you're going to get, right? Mm-hmm. There's less upside. I think we all agree on that. And a quarterback is inferior, obviously. The Texans just ran like an extremely low number of total plays last year, too, which just limits opportunities. But he had 7+ targets in 10 games last season. Mike mentioned the volume specifically when he was playing with Davis Mills. He had 90 catches last year. That's a career high. He got a new contract this offseason. There are no signs of decline from Brandon Cooks. He has at least 78 catches in five of his eight pro seasons. And look at the players around him. There's no real threat to steal a bunch of targets for Brandon Cooks. We'll talk about Nico Collins in a second, but it's not like they made a bunch of splash moves this offseason that suggest that Brandon Cooks' role could decrease. The upside is probably tapped somewhere around like wide receiver 15 or so. Mike mentioned that he had nine is his career high for touchdown catches in a season.
Yeah, under 7-4 in a row.
Yeah. He only had two top 10 weekly finishes last year, but I say next tier Keenan Allen because I suspect by season's end, Brandon Cooks, who's being drafted right now, is wide receiver 21 and has 17 on my board and 19 on Mike's board. My guess is the range of outcomes, if he stays healthy, is like wide receiver 16 to wide receiver 20. Yeah. That's about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that seems about fair. Like you said, the ceiling isn't there as much, but that he has this elite floor where he's just target monster. He's out there every single week, it feels like.
Well, in a game where you don't know what's going to happen on any play, and with a lot of players, there's some comfort in Brandon Cooks. He Absolutely. Is a really steady wide receiver, too, for your roster.
As a wide receiver one for his team, I want to do a little name game with some other iffy wide receiver ones.
Okay.
No offense to Davis Mills, but you know we're waiting to see what it is that he's going to turn into as a quarterback. But would you rather have this year Brandon Cooks or DK Metcalf, Mike Clay?
I'm going Brandon Cooks. I have him three spots ahead.
Yeah, I go Brandon Cooks as well.
Okay. Would you rather have Brandon Cooks or Deontay Johnson, potentially with Kenny Pickett or...
I'm taking Deontay Trubisky. Johnson. I know there are some concerns right now specific to the quarterback situation. To me, they're not as dramatic as they are being currently presented at. I have Deontay Johnson ahead of Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh hasn't had great quarterback play the last couple of years, frankly. I mean,
careful,
you know,
Mike.
Yeah, I know. Big Ben's going to the Hall of Fame, but
he'll block you
last
too
couple
on Twitter.
Of years,
he might already have.
He probably did.
He blocks a lot of people.
But I'm still taking Deontay Johnson.
Yeah, taking Deontay Johnson. All right. What about Brandon Cooks or my guy, Amon-Ra St. Brown? Phil Jates, you go first.
I'm going to take Brandon Cooks here. I'm a little bit nervous in saying this, though, because while there are indicators that Amon-Ra's late season surge is unlikely to sustain, they've got so many more pieces in place right now. You've got guys that are either added, like DJ Chark, and eventually Jameson Williams. Then you got guys that are healthy, like TJ Hawkinson. Those are enough for me to believe that Amon-Ra St. Brown should be a little bit below Brandon Cooks. What I can't get rid of is that, like, St. Brown's just awesome at football. Mm-hmm. And maybe he pushes for 100 catches this year.
When was the last time you did a calf raise?
Me?
Yeah.
Yesterday.
Me too.
Yesterday.
Yeah. I actually did yesterday.
Yeah.
I was a little exhausted from the marathon, but I fought through it.
Yeah. Good for you. Yeah. All right, Mike, are you going to take Amon-Ra St. Brown or Brandon Cooks?
I'm going to take Cooks, but it hurts because I love Amon-Ra. I've been drafting him quite a bit.
Yep.
You know, he's palatable at his ADP, so I've taken him a lot.
Yes, he is. All right, one more wide receiver, one with an iffy quarterback that we like. Darnell Mooney with Justin Fields under center. Would you rather have Darnell Mooney or Brandon
I would
Cooks?
Rather have Cooks, but Mooney is a little undervalued. I mean, he's going to see so much volume again this season. He was, what, top 10 in target share last season. He's undervalued right now.
Who'd the Bears add at wide receiver?
Valus Jones, who I think is older than Amari Cooper.
Wow.
Slight exaggeration.
Not a lot. Age jokes.
Not a lot.
I think they're kind of similar players in terms of profile, right? Two really good speedy guys who can do damage down the field. We're going to see a ton of targets. Both of them playing with second-year quarterbacks. Obviously, we have a lot of expectations for Justin Fields, but two guys at this stage of their career are kind of similar. So I will take Brandon Cooks by just a little bit over Darnell Mooney.
All right, so let's talk about Nico Collins as a late-round flyer.
Yes.
Right now being undrafted in 90% of leagues. Mm-hmm. Liz talked about him before, but he's somebody that has been climbing up these draft boards. Mike, what do you like about Nico Collins in this Texans offense?
Yes, speaking of Darnell Mooney, in my column that we were talking about before, I called him potentially this year's Darnell Mooney, right? That second-year quarterback. Yep. He enters the season as a number two, maybe a shaky offense, but emerges into a fantasy starter. The guy is 6'4", 222 pounds. He was a round three pick last year, entering his second year. Didn't see it in a lot of volume last season, but played quite a bit down the stretch. 12th highest average depth of route last season, so they get him down the field, and he dealt with a really high off-target rate. Some of that had to do with the depth down the field, of course. They're going to be off-target more often, but just a natural day two pick, entering year two, an opportunity to play a lot. This is exactly what you're looking for with late round flyers, a potential breakout player that's falling under the radar.
Yeah, I have a little bit of concern just because, you know, the offense they play in, bottom 10 in completions last year. And like they just, I mentioned this earlier, they played a ton, like very few snaps last season. Mm-hmm. A lot of three and outs obviously contributes to that. He had 33 catches on 60 targets. Not a great catch rate, as you just alluded to. Mm-hmm. That's like just north of 50%, obviously. 10.7 average depth of target last year. But this is about the evolution, right? Not just of him as a player going into his second season, but the offense. Pep Hamilton was on the staff last season, but he was not the offensive coordinator. If they want to open things up this year, there's no player who stands to benefit more than Nico Collins. Mm-hmm. So if they do open things up, and I suspect they may have to, because again, I've been saying this for basically every team in the AFC, there are going to be so many shootouts. Then I think Nico Collins is a perfectly reasonable late round flyer who's going, as we said, undrafted in 90% of leagues.
Exactly. Yep.
Can I bring up Brevin Jordan just to do the tight end thing that we do?
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. Is he their starter? Farrell Brown starting, right?
He's starting, but he's blocking.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, but But come still, on. You're looking at Farrell Brown will probably see 2 to 3 targets a game, and that's might be what
and
Jordan
that's all
sees
that
do.
Need.
It might see, maybe sees 3 to 4. Just
so here's the good
ceiling.
News, Daniel, is if you pick up Brevin Jordan and he doesn't play well, you can drop him and he'll still be on the waiver wire for 6 weeks later.
Okay, gotcha. I was thinking that I could pick up Brevin Jordan and then I could just draft Farrell as my insurance tight end.
Okay.
Well, if you rather would just buy insurance.
Yeah.
Geico asks, how would you love the chance to save some money on insurance?
I would love it. Mm-hmm.
I know you would. After all, who doesn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all the things in your life, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and even the RV. You can get help with your homeowners, condo, or renters coverage. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save.
Football fans, join the next generation of fantasy football with Rainmakers Football, their first ever NFT fantasy game from DraftKings. It's the only NFT fantasy game licensed by the NFLPA, and now you can play all season long for millions in prizes by building the ultimate NFT franchise. Right now, everyone can get their first full roster starter pack for free. Playing Rainmakers is simple. You buy, sell, bid, and win player card NFTs of the biggest names in the game through regular drops and auctions on the DraftKings marketplace. Then you craft your lineups of athletes from your NFT collection and earn points for touchdowns, receptions, and more, just like you do in regular daily fantasy football. So build your NFT franchise and enter free Rainmakers football contests all season long to compete for millions in prizes. The next generation of fantasy sports is here, so download the DraftKings daily fantasy app now. Sign up with the promo code FFF, click the Rainmakers tile, and opt in to get your first card free. Plus, play for millions in prizes all football season while building the ultimate NFT franchise with Rainmakers football. That's promo code FFF. Build, play, win. Only at DraftKings. Contest entries dependent on type and number of NFTs held. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Void where prohibited. The end of that live read always messes me up.
Yeah,
I have
a
real
hard
time. Yeah, good job, though.
There's a lot of words in that one.
I can do your job now. Right, ready? Here, we got this. We're going to talk about Dynasty now.
Well done, Mike,
hey,
shall we?
Go. So here's the thing.
Easy.
That's it. That's my
job.
That's my whole
That's
job.
All you do.
That's
yeah.
it.
Say,
thank you.
You just read Dynasty is next, guys.
Dynasty is next, guys. What is Dynasty, Mike Clay?
Dynasty is football.
Okay.
That's it.
Football is life.
It's been a lot of fun.
So Dynasty is awesome. That's what it is.
It is
my
agreed.
Favorite
yep.
format. I love it so much. It never ends. It's year-round. I think about my Dynasty teams in the middle of the offseason because you can trade. Sometimes you could work waivers. Usually there's a quiet time for that, but I'm always thinking forward to what I want to target. You could trade draft picks. There's just always something going on. So essentially the idea is, and there's varying formats here, but in a nutshell, Dynasty is you keep your whole roster every year, right? So if your team is struggling and you're not going to make the playoffs, you can make some moves, get some rookie picks, get some young players for next season. It's always, there's always activities. There's always things to do. So that probably answers your question. What is a dynasty league and why you would
that's
play in one?
Probably. Yeah. The three main leagues, I feel like that when I think of fantasy leagues are redraft leagues where your whole team goes back mm-hmm. into the pot, everybody redrafts, keeper leagues, which is like a mini version of a dynasty league where you're keeping one or two or three or four players based on something. And then, like you said, a dynasty league. So when you're keeping your entire roster, Mike Clay, and then I'm assuming it's probably just going to be a rookie draft. That's the way that most dynasty leagues work out.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that you go about building your team differently than you do within redraft leagues? Because they're two completely different styles of the game.
Yeah, what's interesting about Dynasty is like if a running back turns 26 or a wide receiver turns 27, people hate them.
Yes.
Like they just, you can't trade them, right? Like it's over. They're done. They might as well not even be in the league anymore. So perceived value is important. And especially in a startup Dynasty draft, right? Like when you're doing your first draft, you're going to see values the whole way in terms of veteran players. You're going to see Davante Adams sitting there way longer than you would normally expect. Don't do it. Just don't do it. He has no trade value. You should be kind of playing for year two, basically. That's usually what I try to do in a startup. I go all young, planning on maybe struggling the first year and then getting an early draft pick, getting another core player and building from there. And that team will last for quite a while. Not every player will work out, but that's the strategy, I think, to start out, and you always have to be looking for them next breakout players. I'm so
glad Mike approached it this way. Mike is being pragmatic right now, right? He's saying, like, you got to look forward to the future, and you got to take your lumps early, right? You got to be the process level 76ers. Mm-hmm. That's well and good. The problem is that those are long seasons when your team is rounding into form.
But that's fun to me. See, okay, I love that. Okay, I love the roster building.
Some people would prefer to thread the needle of instant gratification and eyeing the future. And I think that is where I have tended to land more frequently when I play Dynasty. Just because, A, I don't like losing. B,
but you're so good at
there
it.
Are wow.
sorry.
Wow. B, there are ways that even if you thread the needle to make moves that allow you to sustain over time. And Mike, obviously, always you are so thorough and so diplomatic, and you're just so like process oriented. I totally agree with everything you just said. It is hard though when you're doing a dynasty league to and someone like Derrick Henry or Devontae Adams or Cooper Kupp is sitting there and you're getting down to like pick 15 and you're like, Cooper Kupp could have 1,800 receiving yards this season. Why don't I just take him? So I get where Mike is coming from. If you can be disciplined and obedient, go that way. But if you're out there and you're like, I just couldn't resist, just know that me, Field Yates, I have no issue with what you just did. I hear you. I want to also try to play to win the game this year.
See, the time when those guys have value is if you are contending and you're going to the trade deadline, you can get them at a discount because the other teams in your league that maybe the team that has Cooper Kupp is struggling. And they're like, I'm going to trade this guy for a future draft pick. And you can get a pretty good deal and make that championship run without giving up much. Because, again, logic, no one wants older players.
All the way through, the logic is all there. I'm just telling you that, like, having been on, I did a dynasty startup last year with another group of 11 guys in the industry. And I ended up building a really good team. I also am mindful of the fact that, like, I don't know where things are going to be 2-3 years from right now. Like, I'm a little bit nervous. Like, I will be the first to admit that, like, maybe even this year, things could take a big nosedive. But gosh darn it, that run to the finals last year was awesome.
Yeah, so you're going to have that problem. You said it takes a while. It takes years, right, to build up. You're going to have that problem now for the next 5 years.
I want to just say this.
Poo-pooing me.
Quickly. Travis Kelce is so difficult for me in these leagues because, you know, to Field's point, you love him and you're all in on Travis Kelce because he's still Travis Kelce. But in a dynasty league, as a 33-year-old tight end.
Oh, totally different.
That's the
gross.
Yeah, that's the part that's so hard from that standpoint. So
listen, he's not the only one. There are plenty of them, right? Tom Brady. What do you do with Tom Brady in a dynasty league? Tom Brady.
Great value for this year if he falls to you in the first year of your dynasty league, but not someone that like, yeah. So anyways.
Yeah, I traded him away 10 years ago.
I was going to say 10 years ago, we were wondering if his career was coming over.
All right. How far into the future when you're doing your dynasty leagues, do you look ahead at draft classes? Are you trying to see like, what's coming down the pike that could potentially fit with my team? What do I need in the future?
Not really. It's hard to tell how good a draft class will be until, you know, the months leading up to it, really. So I'm not too worried about that. I mean, the year before when you're making decisions at a trade deadline, you want to collect picks if you're not contending and you want to maybe use them picks to make your team better now at the trade deadline if you are contending. That's the only way I really look at it.
Yeah. I don't mean to hijack the rest of what we have planned for the show. I want to pass along a news update, and we'll dive into this more. It's a sensitive subject, but latest news right now from Browns reporter here at ESPN, NFL Nation reporter Jake Trotter, is that Deshaun Watson's suspension has been prolonged from 6 games to 11 games. He will also pay a $5 million dollar fine. We'll dive into this a little bit more tomorrow on the show, I am sure, or when the time is right, because honestly, fantasy football is about the last thing that matters in the story of Deshaun Watson, but we will talk about it at some point. Deshaun Watson will now be out for the first 11 games of the season. If memory is correct, he'll make a season debut now against the Houston Texans.
Wow. All right. Thank you for that, Field. We're going to do a bunch more dynasty conversation on later shows. We have so many things that we want to be able to get into. This is not the last time that we're going to do this, but we do have some questions that we want to get into, Mike. And we got this earlier, and I want to throw this out there. It's kind of a lot to read, but I'm just going to put it out there, okay?
Okay. Yeah, we got this question on Instagram. To us, yeah.
Hey, Mike, big fan of the podcast, specifically love Daniel and Field. Was hoping you could settle a debate for my league. We decided on a last place punishment for this coming year, but the league voted 7-3 that last place should count as the regular season finisher with the worst record rather than the loser of the consolation bracket. Makes sense. As commissioner, I put it up to a vote expecting everyone to agree with me, but I was quite surprised at the outcome. Democracy will prevail, which I appreciate, but I think the consolation bracket adds,
My goodness.
I've read so many live reads here. This is so hard.
The consolation bracket adds two to three more meaningful weeks
of football and adds competition to the league. Otherwise, you have a few teams that will just check out after week 14, which is absolutely happens in consolation brackets. In my opinion, I don't think that the playoff teams should be entitled to free reign of the waivers. Overall, I see this to be an issue of competitiveness, but I'd love to hear your thoughts and would greatly appreciate a response, especially if you agree with me so I can tell the league that they're wrong.
Yeah, so first of all, if that was an ad read, we'd be getting sued for malpractice.
Okay, come on now.
Terrible
it's like
job.
A full page. Whatever.
But anyway, so first of all, this is the job of the commissioner to be ahead of this. If you're going to have a rule like this, you need to designate that rule, decide that rule before the season, right? You can't have this. So I blame the commissioner. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. This one's on you for not having this right. However, if this was me, it would be the end of the regular season. I like to, once the regular season's over, whoever's last is done. Once we get to the playoffs, if you're out and it's not like if it's not a dynasty or a keeper, those players don't need to be involved on waivers. Let the teams that are still active compete the rest of the season. But again, if you want to use the consolation bracket, have that rule in place.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to weigh in here because I do. So Presley just got in my ear, our producer upstairs. I think I agree with him. I disagree because of the fact that a loser punishment is on the line. If you're playing for something, which not being the loser in that loser punishment, I don't have a problem with you being able to make waiver claims or do things throughout the playoffs. But I do agree with you that the commissioner needs to be able to set the rules. And this is the expectation for everybody once it starts.
Right, but I think that in this situation, you have to use the end of the regular season, because if people didn't know and they're out of the playoffs, so they're just not paying attention. If they don't know, they're not like setting their lineup. But if you say before the season, okay, this is how we're going to play it out with the consolation bracket.
Fair.
Which in this point, in this case where there's a punishment, I agree with you. Then you could utilize it that way. That makes more sense.
Yeah. Field, do you want to weigh in?
Nope.
We did everything.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I agree with what Mike said.
All right.
My big takeaway.
He was not listening.
That's just what you always say. I disagree with what Mike said.
It's a pretty good safe harbor, right? You just like agree with Mike Clay in fantasy. It's like usually going to work out for you.
Usually works out. Just fade Mike. We got one more question. Mike, you have your own conundrum within a keeper league. You want to give us what's going on?
So a few years ago in my neighborhood, we started basically a parents league, right? A bunch of dads got together. We drafted teams. It's been going on for a few years. There were 10 people in the league. We expanded this year to two more, right? So we're going from 10 to 12.
Okay. How many keepers do you have?
It's a keeper league, right? So you can keep up to two keepers.
Okay.
All right. And it's based on the round, right? So if you draft a guy in the 12th, you want to keep him, you give up a 10th rounder. But one of the new owners of the teams, one of the new dads, he's not too happy about that. He wants keepers. He's an expansion team. And he's like, well, everyone else gets keepers. So what can we do for him? And my thought is nothing. You know, year in, year one. I said,
you're a professional fantasy football expert playing with your neighbers. And you don't want to give the guy a couple of keepers?
I have not won the league yet.
What?
Wow.
No, have not won
the years in leagues, like a year after year, but your own home league.
So I'm thinking, like, I'll let them pick their draft spot first. The two new teams.
Presume one and two, right?
Maybe. It's up to them. They can do whatever they want. But in terms of keepers, I think the returning teams could keep their players.
But doesn't there seem like there's a way to meet in the middle? Maybe it's like, hey,
what is that? That's my question.
Maybe the answer is, how many teams are there again? 10?
There's 10 returning. Yeah.
So they'll be 12 now, right? Maybe what they get is they get picks 1 and 2 and 11 and 12.
To wrap out their keepers. So they get
so they basically get like in between round 1 and 2, they get an extra pick.
I think because there will be teams that don't keep players or keep
maybe
one
it's
player.
Between rounds hold two on, and three. They on. Need two extra picks somewhere.
Based on what you just said, there will be teams that don't keep players or only keep one player. That sounds like that team problem. That has nothing to do with the league. That has nothing to do with the new commissioners coming in. If you don't want to keep your two players, that's on you. But like, I don't think that those people should be punished because of that.
I don't know. I don't like it.
Well, then why did you ask it on live podcasting?
Because I want to know if I'm wrong. I trust you guys. I want to hear your opinions on this. And
is there not a way?
I think you just don't get for 1 year. You just don't have keepers.
Do you do an expansion draft? Is there any way to do an expansion draft where it's like, hey, everybody that's here within this free agent pool between this amount, or you get, you know, I don't really know the answer to that question. Maybe if you had asked Field and I to be in the league, we'd be a bit more invested
in. Do you live in my neighborhood?
No, I don't. No, I don't. I don't make that much money.
My neighborhood that has a new pool in it.
That's right.
Yeah, where
you got a drawbridge to your neighbor's house.
Oh, your house. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
I can't be there.
I don't know. We'll see. You guys are not helpful because you didn't just agree with
well,
me.
Well, let us know how it turns out because we want to hear about how you lose your home league, Mike. All That's right. going to do it I for will. Us today. Texans, Titans had tomorrow. A ton of fun being able to talk with these guys. For Field and Mike, are you back tomorrow?
I am not.
Thank God.
All right. Well, Field and I will be That's back here tomorrow.
We think it's Stefan. We have no idea what it is. Somebody. Gonna be. Maybe Daniel and I. Maybe Mike and I.
I'm like
maybe Daniel, too. Mike and I.
I have the already for week
Nate
one
Ravis
DFS.
Might be on the show.
17 articles, sorry. I'll be working, though.
Of course you will be.
Swimming and
of
working.
Of course we will be.
Pod Vader will come back for tomorrow.
How? There you go. That would be a thing. We're going to talk Colts and Jags tomorrow. The Jonathan Taylor experience coming
Ooh,
up. Field.
Maybe Jonathan Taylor will join us again.
Ooh.
He was so generous with this
All right,
time.
If he's here, maybe I'll come.
Probably not. For Field, Mike, and Daniel, see you guys tomorrow.
Bye, Mom.
Seriously, though, if Jonathan Taylor is here, you're definitely not coming on the show.
Why not?
Well, and Wally Pipped. Familiar with that reference or no?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
but I'm older than you. What are you talking about? I know that reference.
He's a NASCAR guy with a basement shrine, a Langford fan for life. Chargers are off to a terrible start, but that won't change his mind. Matching up all the cornerbacks, touchdown regression and weekly stats. But if your team falls flat, he's the one to blame. He's a brainiac, brainiac on the case. With projections that can put us in first place. He's a brainiac, brainiac, he's Mike Clay.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.